Hey everybody, welcome to Myopia Movies. I apologize for the frog in my throat. I can promise it's not on the episode, just in my intro. Welcome to The Lady in the Water as we continue our M. Night Shyamalan month. M. Night Shyamalan on Lady in the Water. Don't worry guys, we've got plenty more here to do. And we're having a little fun here, aren't we? I appreciate you guys for sticking with us, and I thank you for recording, or reviewing, rather, sharing, and doing all those things you did to make us more popular. Thanks, guys.
Welcome to Myopia Movies. This week, we talk about the first M. Night Shyamalan movie that Disney said no to since Wide Awake. We're watching The Lady in the Water from 2006, directed, of course, by M. Night Shyamalan. I am host Nick Hoffman and Riff Ross Cineprop, if it still exists.
Hello, this is Daniel, a contributor to popdose.com, and I've had many a drunk neighbor come up to me at 2 a.m. say they're a mermaid.
Narf! Sorry. Narf.
All right.
Sorry, I'm author Matthew W. Quinn, and if I put myself one of my stories and I'm not a complete fuck-up, feel free to slap me.
I mean, I'll tell you what, though.
I have a character based on one of my stories, and he's a mess.
No, check out Matt's Amazon page. You got a lot of fun stuff there, but
this movie,
you should have just let Narf sit.
Narf.
Well, because that's about as much sense as this movie makes. Like, this movie is terrible. It looks weird, although I guess it still has kind of a little bit of that, like, I don't know, like, Shyamalan look, but it's just
bad.
I mean, it has a feel to it, but, like, he relies so much on CGI, it's just awful. Like, all the CGI in this is terrible.
A whole bunch of things in this movie is terrible, let's be honest.
Yeah.
This is probably the first M. Night Shyamalan movie I skipped because the reviews were bad. I guess I was finally developing a sense of taste after about a decade because it just sounded so bizarre.
I'm going to stop everyone right here. Matt has a sense of taste.
Yeah, no kidding. We're going to make you watch The Giver again.
Oh, boy.
And then Spawn. Oh, I didn't like Spawn. So
okay,
mind.
There you go.
This is, I mean, probably worse. I mean, The Giver's not a great movie, but it's not this bad. This is bad. I didn't see this one in theaters. After The Village, I said, I'm done.
After Signs, I said, I was done.
Like,
didn't like Signs?
No, Signs was fine, but then the next movie was The Village, which I remember getting crappy reviews when came out.
I just gave him the benefit of a doubt because I'm like, well, I liked Unbreakable and I like Science. Like, maybe it's just, you know, one that, I mean, you want to talk about people who gave him another chance? Paul Giamatti. Like, poor Paul Giamatti, who is, at this point, I would imagine, pretty hot shit. Like,
this came out 2 years after Sideways, I think.
It did. And then the movie, the one in between was Cinderella Man, which he was actually nominated for Best Supporting Actor.
Yes,
for.
He was.
I think he won, didn't he?
He didn't win.
Yeah. And he'd already been Harvey Pekar at this point with American Splendor. Like, this is him as kind of indie darling Paul Giamatti. I like Paul Giamatti. He's just not given anything to do other than stutter.
Yeah, I liked him in this movie. He thought he did a good job, but... And we'll get to that.
Yeah.
He didn't do a good job, but that's because he was handed some really bad material. He tried his best.
I don't even know. Like, and this cast is so wasted. Like, there's some good people in this. I mean, Bryce Dallas Howard, I don't think... this movie is finally convinced me she's not a good actress.
Was this her first movie?
It's possible.
She was in The Village, which I thought came out earlier.
Okay. Yes, you're right. The Village came out before this. Let's see.
She's so great in that one Black Mirror episode, but here she is just.
I thought she did a decent job, you know, playing somebody who, you know, doesn't understand our culture. Like, hey, I don't understand that it's important to wear clothes.
Well, okay, if that's the case, how the hell is she able to communicate with everyone?
That's a good point. Why would the fish people would know how to speak English?
Why can she sometimes speak English, and why does she sometimes use that weird sign language? That
nonsense.
Yeah.
Nonsense. You could just say nonsense. Yeah, this is her first movie, The Village. She was in something called Book of Love the same year, which I haven't heard of. And then Lady of the Water is 2006. And then after that, she kind of has a career. I mean, she's Gwen Stacy, that's Spider-Man 3.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And now, of course, she's in those mediocre to bad Jurassic World movies.
The famous blonde, Gwen Stacy, who are we going to cast? How's about Bryce Dallas Howard?
Brilliant.
That's right.
Now she's, I guess, better at directing. I think she did a good job on Mandalorian and Book of Boba Fett, but we'll see. She's apparently slated to direct the remake of Flight of the Navigator.
Ooh.
I'm telling you. I don't have answers.
No respect for the source material, so well.
Unfortunately, this one had, the Way of the Water had nothing but respect for the source material.
Because the source material is some made-up bedtime story that Cheyenne Mamamalan would tell the four-year-olds.
One of the reviews of it said this movie would make a lot more sense if they were protecting a mermaid from a werewolf instead of a narf and a scrunt and a madam narf and all this gobbledygook.
Narf!
I think he just died. I'm going to be honest. I think he drowned in the pool at the very beginning. Like, I know there's no Shyamalanian twist, but that's the only way the rest of this makes sense.
What a twist!
Like, okay, so, I mean, very briefly, the superintendent is a guy named Cleveland Heap, which is the worst name, the worst script name I've ever heard. And there's a woman who's swimming in the pool, and like the pool's been gummed up for some reason, and yada yada yada. And so in the middle of the night, he goes out, he hears the woman splashing about, and so he says, "Hey, get out of the pool." Fine. She doesn't get out of the pool. Fine. So eventually he freaks out and thinks she's drowning, even though it's a pool, you can see the bottom, it's clear. He jumps in the water, doesn't find her because, of course, it's a pool and it's clear, so he wouldn't see her. He gets out of the pool, he slips and falls, bangs his head, and then rolls back into the water. And at this point, I think he just drowns. And the rest of this is all in his head. Because the second
you say Jacob's ladder.
You know what? Why not?
It would make a lot more sense than the rest of this movie. But yeah, so pretty much the girl who is a Bryce Dallas Howard, who sometimes speaks, sometimes doesn't, is a narf. In particular, she's a madam narf. And the scrunts, who are like grass dogs, who are trying to kill her for some reason, and they've broken the agreements between... Holy shit.
They have this whole mythology voiceover at the beginning of the movie where once man lived at the shores of the sea and learned from the wisdom of the narfs, and then mankind moved inland and became greedy and violent and made war and could not hear the narfs. And so the narfs eventually started sending people to try and save us from our wicked ways, but the scrunts are hunting the narfs. And does anybody really want to slap me right now?
I mean, kinda, sorta.
I mean, it's given by like David Ogden Stiers. Like, it sounds very important, and it's all illustrated with like cave drawings as a cartoon.
What is this, Fern Gully?
At least Fern Gully focuses on a single issue. At the end of Fern Gully, I know it's about environmentalism and protecting. I couldn't tell you what the fuck this movie's about. It's a woman named Story. Get it, everyone? Get it.
And then there's one of the main characters is a critic.
Yes, Matt Quinn shows up in this, quoting TV tropes. And they're like, what's this?
Why are you getting on me? What did that be Daniel who'd be the critic?
No, yes. But Bob Balaban is definitely you, Matt.
You just quoting TV tropes. All it is TV trope. So this trope is the group of friends who are stoners. Now, this is a family movie, so I'm not going to die here, but I'm going to learn a valuable lesson. Fuck you, die. This is like...
Like some people were saying that, yeah, it sounds like you're about to say it already. This is him taking revenge on people who don't like The Village.
They didn't like The Village.
And the thing is, they don't subvert any of those tropes. I mean, it's all played straight. It's like a dumbass who falls down after trying to skateboard on a rail and says, what am I meant to do that?
I thought at the
end, don't care if you meant to do that. You failed miserably.
I thought at the end of the movie, they realized that they got all their roles wrong and had to switch up everything, like with the grass wool hanging around.
That's nowhere near good enough to save this material.
This is literally saying, well, this is why I shouldn't have the gun. And then you turn around, you shoot yourself in the face just to prove a point. Like, he really, because, like, at one point, then he goes, well, it's like people who just explain their emotions in a rom-com, or people who stand in the rain too long to have a conversation. No one would just stand in the rain. And then at the end of the movie, they're just standing in the fucking rain. And guess what? It doesn't mean anything. He's right.
Well, they even tried to say that, if I recall, Pauly G is like going, oh, well, it's a symbol of purification and rebirth. And then Bob Balaban's just like, no, it's not.
It doesn't mean anything. And Paul Giamatti is trying so hard. I don't know if it was his choice or M. Night. I'm going to assume it was M. Night who said you should have a stutter. So he's got this horrible, like, stutter going on. And he's just like, I want to know what it was like to be an actor in 2003, and M. Night Shyamalan is shopping around strips. Like, it must have just been a free pass, because, like, obviously you've told the Bruce Willis story, right? And then, I don't know, I guess Bruce Willis liked working with him, because he was in Unbreakable just the next year. And Unbreakable also has Samuel Jackson in it. Like, it's got a good cast.
Yeah.
And then, you jump from Bruce Willis to Joaquin Phoenix and Mel Gibson. And yeah, I know Mel Gibson and, you know, Sugar Tits and all, but he's an incredible actor. He really is. And the script isn't great, but he sells the hell out of every second of that thing. And so, I mean, and again, The Village. Village isn't great, but it has an incredible cast in it. And so, like, by this point, Paul Giamatti is just 3 years too late, you know, and he's dealing with it. But it's really something. This movie is just something.
Also, this is meant to be a subversion of tropes. And why is there literally a character that's college woman who fucks?
That's true.
Or at least goes to parties a lot.
Well, she's fucking. Let's be real here.
Well, like, you're skipping the best part, which is that the main character, other than Cleveland, he is Story. Her name is just Story. And that's fucking stupid. I don't care.
It gets even dumber when they reveal M. Night Shyamalan's. Yeah, he makes himself a major character in this one, or at least, what will you call it, a featured player or something?
Oh, he is the star, baby. Like, he is the featured player of this cast. And I believe, in fact, we pointed this out, stay tuned next week when we do The Village. But, like, The Village, they call them the players in it. And so he's the most featured player of all of this.
And he is such a non-entity, but apparently
he's the worst actor. I'm sorry, like... In The Village, his cameo is a reflection. He's holding up a newspaper and you see him, he talks for 4 seconds. In this, he has pages of dialogue. Paul Giamatti's sitting in his trailer and his acting partner for the scene, most of the time, is a woman who's silent and M. Night Shyamalan.
Mm-hmm.
Night Shyamalan again. Oh, jeez.
So Paul Giamatti is a grown-up Morty. Is that what you're implying?
Well, that's kind of
that's not an implication. That's who he is.
He is. He has it, like, what he's good at is his voice breaking and just kind of going for it.
Oh jeez, I don't like Merlot. It's fabric.
And then all you have to do is make it 25% more New England. Mm-hmm. That's all it. Like, because he's from New England.
Morty, get the rifle. There's a scrunt. Morty.
Well, and I wonder, I mean, like, Cinderella Man is Ron Howard, so it has no texture, but it's fine. I like Cinderella Man.
I've never seen that movie.
It's fine. I mean, it's Zellweger, it's Russell Crowe. It's an Akiva Goldsman script. So it's fine.
Oh, it's about a boxer. That's why they cast Russell Crowe in it.
Yeah, he's a fighting.
Mike in movies, Mike in songs, and fighting around the world.
But I mean, like, Alexander Payne's Sideways. It's just like, can you imagine going from working with Alexander Payne? I mean, Ron Howard is not a great director, but he's a good director. He's a competent director, right? To going to M. Night Shyamalan, who's like, I wrote the script, I'm producing it, and I'm directing. Oh, and I'm starring.
So he's like a somewhat less skilled version of Kevin Costner. Well, I mean, written by, directed by, and starring Kevin Costner for the greater glory of Kevin Costner.
I'm kind of offended that your immediate go-to was Kevin Costner.
Well, I was going to say his favorite, Alfred Hitchcock. I know Alfred Hitchcock would co-write a thing, but like that's who he wants to be. Very clearly, he wants to be Alfred Hitchcock. What was the last thing Costner did that was any good?
I heard Open Range was good. I just never got around to seeing it. And I liked the Superman movie.
Oh, yes, oh, yeah. Pa Kent.
I mean, that's believing in your rhetoric when you tell Superman not to use his powers because people will find out what he is and you let yourself die.
That was a stupid, stupid death. Because who's going to see him? Who's going to see him in a tornado? No one's going to see him. I think he was just trying to get away from Ma Kent in that movie. But he didn't direct that. He just, he was like a, you know, kind of a co-star. The last thing he directed was Open Range. Although there's a movie coming out soon, apparently. Well, it's in pre-production, so who knows. Called Horizon, which is...
He was in that one Jack Ryan movie with Chris... Is Chris Evans the one who was...
I thought it was Chris... Chris Pine.
Chris Pine, the one who's the new... Captain Kirk.
Yes. He was in Jack Ryan's Shadow Recruit.
That's that one.
And then other than that, he's been sitting on TV for the last 4 years of that Yellowstone show, which is, I haven't seen a minute of, but I know people who really like. Frankly,
my parents like it. That's about all I need to say there, I think.
Yeah. He is in, I believe, two movies that are in the Criterion Collection. One movie that probably shouldn't be in the Criterion Collection.
The Big Chill?
Yeah, he's in The Big Chill. Very good.
And what's the second one?
Bull Durham.
Ugh.
Yeah, that's a shame. And he's in an episode we've talked about doing for a long time, of course, Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. Episode we will never do, Dances with Wolves. And episode we've talked about, but I don't know if we could do, JFK.
How about The Postman?
Oh, that's a bad movie. That's a really bad, boring movie. I don't know.
Okay, boring. That could be a problem.
Boring and 3 hours long.
Yeah, we're all like busy.
Literally
people.
3 hours
At
long.
Least JFK isn't boring.
JFK has a surprisingly good cast.
Oh, Waterworld. Don't forget Waterworld.
Waterworld, stay tuned. It's going to be coming up later this season. I can guarantee it will be coming up later this season. Yeah.
There we go. So where are we in this movie at this point?
Other than explaining, the very beginning, very quickly, Story starts getting injured because of the scrunts, which are like grass dogs that can lie perfectly flat, so no one sees them.
Unless you look at them in a mirror and then you can see their glowing red eyes. That's a whole scene later.
And no one seems to notice that a middle-aged apparent bachelor has got what to any outsider looks like a stoned teenage runaway half his age living in his house wearing only a shirt.
Yeah, this is weird too.
And again, it's an apartment. No one knows each other.
Well, but okay, so they're living in an apartment complex. It's kind of, it's not really well-defined actually in some ways, other than it has a very oddly shaped pool. But the superintendent doesn't live in the building. He has a weird, very outdated house on the far side of the pool, which seems to be in a field barely linked to the thing, right? Like, every building that I've lived in that has a superintendent has either an office that the superintendent lives in, or they live in the building in another apartment.
Now, see, I thought this was like the Florida Project, where this is a motel for homeless people.
It seems like a lot of eccentric and weird people live in here, you know?
And everyone's a writer, because I guess everyone's a writer.
Yeah, you've got the Asian party girl and her mom who can't speak English. You got the, like, five potheads who, like, talk philosophy. You've got the Hispanic family with the five daughters. They're important later. You've got M. Night Shyamalan and his sister. It's like a bunch of colorful people help the stuttering superintendent save the mermaid from the werewolf.
Yeah.
It sounds better in concept.
I don't think it sounds good in concept either, but it does sound better. You're right. And I guess we should kind of get into a little bit of who some of these characters are.
That's funny. You're implying this movie has characters.
Oh, no. I mean, like, my wife walked in the room and then walked back out. For example, Freddie Rodriguez is Reggie. He's decided to work out only one arm. That's his character. That's it. It's done.
He sprouts a bunch of scientific method, high school level, to try and prove why he's doing this.
Jeffrey White is in this movie.
As someone who likes crossword puzzles, that's it. And then somehow, through the crossword puzzles, he's able to divine answers to her questions like he's reading tea leaves. And that, my friends, is fucking stupid.
I can predict the future of Wordle. I don't know about you.
I mean, what's even worse is his son, who's played by Noah Gray Tabby, who's from Heroes, if you ever saw Heroes, who somehow, staring at a bunch of cereal boxes,
yes.
Read her fucking mind, and I was like, I was going to say I missed something and I should rewind, but I'm like, I can't watch this anymore. I don't want to rewind. This is incredibly
The way of the Sith demands unflinching communion with pain. Do it.
You know, seeing a guy just randomly be obsessed with cereal boxes, I half expected Jerry Seinfeld to show up.
It's just, I mean, although you do bring up a good point. If there was any levity here on purpose, it would have been a better movie. This movie is so, like, grim and bleak. But you know what? Like,
there's nothing going on in this movie. There's no tension. There's really no villains. It's just Bryce Dallas Howard shows up, and we're never given a reason why everyone in this apartment should care.
Oh, and by the way, they don't. At least we don't get it, because at the very end, an eagle fucking shows up and then we smash the credits. Like, the movie's like, oh, they're gonna ask questions, we better get out of here. Run, M. Night, run! Like, it just is.
And of course, the final shot is a POV view from the pool, which is artistic, I guess.
Here's the thing, man. When Roger Deakins was shooting your fucking movie, you can pull off shots like this. You can't pull off shots like this. There's, like, everything is crowded. Like, it's just so bad. I don't... Oh my god, this is so bothering me. But we did it. We're here. Okay. Good. Who is this guy? Christopher Doyle filmed this. Holy shit. He did Hero. He was the cinematographer for Hero 2002, Jet Li.
Oh, okay.
That's a much better movie than this.
Yeah.
It also looks better than this. I love the cinematographer. How did he do this? The only thing that they did the same is the color scheming. Jesus Christ. That's bad. Oh, that's bad. Anyway, I mean, this movie's impossible to go through beat by beat. Like, I literally could not.
There is so much kind of paint by numbers Chekhov-ing going on here. Like, they set up a bunch of Chekhov's guns, you know, fire later. Everything is set up so there's no, like, ass pulls later.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's so obvious they're setting stuff up to be important later.
Yeah, so we have M. Night Shyamalan. It's like, the opening is we're getting introduced to some people as, like, Bob Balaban's character, whose name I forget. Is it Faber? Mr. Faber?
Something like that. He's going to be the critic for the local paper.
Which, I'm sorry, like, Philadelphia Inquirer is a thing. You pay the rights to say Philadelphia Inquirer. We know you're in Philadelphia. You never leave Philadelphia.
Oh, the glorious days where papers had full-time movie reviews.
Well, they immediately make fun of that. Did you notice that? He goes, I'm going to be writing the books and movie reviews for the local paper. Because Bob Balaban, who can be very funny, is not allowed to emote at all in this. Except for when he screams for half a second. And Paul Giamatti goes, they fly out for that? And he goes, yes, they did. Okay. Because you would not need to fly someone out for that. You could read books and watch movies anywhere in the country.
This movie is like,
been in 2006.
It's like trying to land punches against critics of Cheyenne Mamamamamalan.
Nick called at one point M. Night Mumble On.
Yeah,
which I thought was clever.
That's fair, but it never lands any punches. I mean, it's perfectly okay for... artists to make fun of their critics. A lot of them have done that, but who is Bob Balaban supposed to be? What's the point?
Well, and if you're calling attention to film reviewers, you better be doing something with that. Make it the point of the movie, but it's not. You also have M. Night Shyamalan, who's a character, because of course he's the star of this movie. He's literally sixth billed as an actor, or seventh billed, excuse me. He's living with his sister, Anna Rand, who is played by Sonrita Chowdhury.
Yes, she's having fun with her part, but his whole point is he's too unconfident to write his book. And then story reveals...
His manifesto.
Yeah, the story reveals he will inspire a future president of the United States, but someone will kill him. Making himself into writer Jesus?
First of all, it's a cookbook. Second of all, it will inspire someone to, like, it's really, it sounds like he's writing a hate, like, it's a manifesto. I don't know how else to put this. It's really something.
Oh, yeah, he's writing about, what, his friends and politicians, and he describes at one point, and it's like, dude.
He's writing the Charter Diaries, right?
Yeah.
Like, he's inspiring a whole wave of supremacists. It's really weird. And he lives with his sister from Mississippi Masala. That's where I remember her from. Sonrita Chowdhury. You've already mentioned the college girl who's living with her mother, who only speaks
Korean.
Yeah. Who unfortunately becomes really important to the story, to the point where he's calling her in the club while shit is going down.
What's with that bullshit scene where he's trying to get more of the bedtime story to get he's to be origin story, and he actually has to lay down on her couch before she'll say anything?
Yeah.
I think it's called a flex.
Absolutely not a flex. Because he is supposed to be looking like a child, I guess, or an innocent. So he's playing like stupid.
No, I'm saying it's a flex by the mom. Like, I'll tell you the story, but you got to do this stuff.
Why?
Yeah, I don't get it.
Maybe because he's really annoying her.
Okay, then the movie should say that.
I also, the idea of having a wise old person who can tell you the story is not uncommon to fairy tales, I guess. But, like, this is incredibly annoying. We already got into the stupid names, Narf and Scrunt.
Narf.
Narf.
And Scrunt.
Take a shot when we say Narf.
Please don't. Your liver will die.
Yeah. And then there's the Tartix. Tarutix.
Something like that.
Are those the bamboo gorilla things?
Yes. Yeah. That beat up the scribes eventually, one of which is played by, of course, Doug Jones.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, that guy's done everything, hasn't he?
Doug Jones must have 1,000 IMDb credits, which I should pull out because we're here. So just very quickly, for the first half of the story, the grandma is explaining how this works. There's an arc. She is a nymph, a sea nymph. Fine. She is literally Ariel from The Little Mermaid. She's a redhead who has a cabinet of things that are neat, and the cabinet of things that are neat even have forks in it.
Okay, good. I was wondering when we were going to get to that moment where Paul G is down there and like
She somehow excavated her fetish cabinet underneath the pool, but yes. It doesn't drain the pool.
He is a Navy SEAL in this. He holds his breath for like 4.5 minutes. He also, I believe, at one point, if I am interpreting this scene correctly, which who knows, but if he finds a jar of water with a straw in it, and so he drinks some of the air out so that he has longer to breathe.
Yes.
Yeah, it's like when you take the jar and turn it upside down and hold it under the water.
Oh, I know. And I guess we're supposed to believe it's magical realism, but it really is Ariel's cabinet of the whatever, and it's very bizarre.
It is. Dingle hopper?
But there is. There's silverware in there.
You know what? That would have been a better movie because the Dinglehopper in Little Mermaid actually had a point. It was about how Ariel wanted to be a human.
Is the story a klepto stealing bits and bobs from apartments or something?
Well, I mean, that's the first thing you see her do, right? She reaches up, someone had left a necklace by the pool, and she's jacking it. So we don't know anything. The reason Paul goes there is... she got mauled. One of the scrunts gets her and shoots her, like scratches up her legs. All that we see of any injury to her is her legs get cut up.
Yeah. But the scrunts have poison.
Right. There's medicine in her cave, which is all part of the story. Here's the thing that bothers me. Like, I have kids, I get it. and you read Hansel and Gretel or something, and the kid will ask additional questions. Fine, but at a certain point, it's either in the story or it's not. Like, you can't just go back to the grandma and say, let's say the Narf gets mauled by a scrub. And you're just like, okay, well, what do we do about it? Do we just let her bleed out? Like, there's this girl I'm peeing on the couch, man, and we've got to do something about it.
Now, this movie would have made more sense if it was a well-known bedtime story. But we don't know what the hell is going on.
Is this supposed to be a Korean bedtime story?
But who knows?
Yeah.
But he's not Korean. Yeah. He's an American. Born and bred. And if he had family, presumably it's from India, not from Korea. So, like, and again, Daniel will be the way to the end. If you stay through the end credits, there's literally a line to his kids. Like, I'll tell you the story one more time, but then it's straight to bed. And you're just like, dude, I'm sorry, man. Like, I make a story for my kid. I don't get $150 million from MGM or whatever to make the movie.
And bedtime stories are meant to put you to sleep.
Oh, yeah. This one really worked well with my daughters. So, you know what an audience is going to do? Not fall asleep. I'm going to keep it action-packed.
What? I didn't think it was boring. It was just kind of weird.
I don't know if we watched the same movie.
Well, I think Matt's right. This is nonsensical and weird, but I'd say it's also boring because there's no stakes.
I found it very difficult to pay attention to this movie. I'll be honest. Like, but yeah, so he holds his breath for, like, you know, Chris Angel mindfuckery, and holds his breath for like some 7.5 minutes. Brings up this vial of liquid, and she starts to get better, but not all the way. She still has scars on her legs.
Why was she sick? Oh, because of the scruts. Okay.
The tree wolf is poisonous.
The fucking scruts.
Oh, those goddamn scruts.
Oh, my God. And there's this whole alliance between the scruts and the who gives a shit. And we're alluded to some sort of peacekeepers called the Tartutics, and eventually that the eagles will come and rescue her.
After she throws a ring into the volcano.
Right. I mean, Andy Serkis should be riding the fucking eagle at this point. I will also say they talk about something called the Blue World that she supposedly comes from.
I assume that was the sea.
Yeah.
But we don't see any of it, which would have been much more interesting.
Because she's forbidden to talk about it, which is why I guess she's silent.
Yeah, I think they kind of rules lawyer a bit with, you know, having her nod her head. She can't talk about it. But you can do answer yes or no questions.
Ugh. It's a bad scene, ladies and gentlemen.
She spends the whole time sitting in the shower with the writer's sister, hanging out with her and translating everything for a whole bunch of dudes hanging around the door.
Even though she shouldn't be able to translate, because what story is doing makes no sense. She's just like randomly pointing.
Well, I mean, and like the gestures aside, like I don't know, man. Like, it would be interesting if she had to get back to the water and the scrub was keeping her from the water. We don't really get that. Although at one point there's like kind of a jump scare where it goes through the drywall and starts chomping at her.
Yeah, I remember that.
But that, it looks terrible.
The scrubs are real bad CGI.
I will say, stay tuned next week for The Village, but something I remember, the movie's kind of a mess, but they have actual costumes for the monsters in the wood, and therefore there's something to look at. That's a big note you need here, Shyamalan. Like, you need something to look at.
And call Jim Henson. They'll probably fix you up something nice from the preacher shop.
Or whoever even made the thing for the village. They did a great job. Like, it was the movie before this. Like, you should still know where that is. Regardless. So the story progresses, and it goes on and on and on and on. Paul Giamatti is trying to get answers, because for this fucking thing to get together, he has to get together a D&D campaign. There's like the guild, which is 5 people.
Well, at first he thinks he's the guardian, and Story backs him up on that, and then it turns out he's not. So he has to find like the guild and the translator?
Yeah, the D&D.
The symbologist, I think.
Yeah, the D&D party analogy makes sense.
Well, so you have a guild who's supposed to be 5 people who are just standing around and hanging out. And he keeps going to the film guy and going, so what's this trope all about? And he's like, are you kidding me? All right, well, you're interrupting my nap. And you're just like, go fuck yourself, everyone in this script. And literally, M. Night Shyamalan is revisiting the entire cast. There's this one dude who's always on the toilet, That's something else we should mention. He's not a very good superintendent, and everyone kind of hates him, but they also kind of feel bad for him.
Because of his stutter.
Because of his stutter, exactly. And like, so there's this one guy, he's like, he goes to the guy's apartment to fix a broken toilet, right? And he goes, don't tell Mr. Heat, but I only paid a plumber to fix it. And he's just like, oh, okay, I guess. I don't know why you had to share that, but we're all here. We're all here together. That's great. He becomes important later on. You have, like, there's supposed to be a healer, and he thinks, like, and in the end, he becomes the healer, but he doesn't think he's the healer. He's supposed to be the guardian because the girl OD'd on his couch or whatever. I mean, I've got nothing. Like, this movie is held together with tin foil.
You're not wrong. I mean, and whoever compared this to a D&D campaign is absolutely right.
Meanwhile, like, she's, like, doling out this wisdom to people, kind of. Right? And, like,
she doesn't really do anything. She's just in the shower the entire movie.
I want to know why after the village. I mean, I guess the village, she kind of becomes the hero, but, like, why she wanted to work with M. Night again? Or, I guess, Night. He just says Night. So, Night Shyamalan. Yeah, I don't know. But I do want to emphasize how weird.
Is she a manic pixie dream girl?
I wouldn't say so, because she's not like the object of people's desires.
Yeah, she kind of inspires Heap to overcome his stuttering and inspires M. Night Shyamalan to write his book. But she's too weird, and aren't manic pixie dream girls supposed to be lively and fun?
Yes.
She's just kind of weird and
also
trippy.
I don't know if she helps him overcome his stutter, or for some reason when she's around his stutter goes away.
I think it's the latter.
But I mean, it's never explained. It's just something you might notice. And she also is supposed to inspire this hate manifesto. And I know we sound like we're being funny, but like literally it's described as the cookbook, which already is. But it has views that are so significant it will inspire a future president, a great Midwest orator, whatever that means, and change the world, question mark.
Well, someone on Alt TV Trope said that was probably the idea is the theory they're saying is I'm stuttering, oh no. Is that so? The great Midwestern order is Barack Obama.
And his ideas are so controversial, he's going to be murdered for them.
The capitalist pigs are crushing the one who speaks against their hegemony.
I don't know what that is. It just sounds to me like he's writing Mein Kampf or something. Like, it's bad. I don't know, like, he goes, it feels like the kind of thing I'm writing is so significant that it will only be important after I'm dead.
Not gonna do it, Bar.
I mean, no. That was too much emotion, Daniel. You have to flat it out. Oh no. I feel like this book might be very important. I'm feeling feelings about this. You can tell. Shyamalan. Like, it's so, like, I'm writing this speech that will make everyone see. I'll fix the world like I want it to be, and they'll kill me for it. You're just like, what is any of this? I don't know, and I don't know why he kind of becomes part of the hero of the story at the end. And at the end, he's like, will I make it? And she says, if I recall, your sister will have seven children. You will live long enough to meet two of them.
Yes.
And you know what would be great? Again, M. Night Shyamalan, do your little twist, buddy. He just kills her right out. Because those kids can never be born, he can never die.
What a twist.
Just give me anything, right? Like, but like, you have to remember, this is cut between him, Paul Giamatti, wearing like a white button-down shirt, right? Drinking milk and cookies with Mrs. Choi's house, and asking like, you know, who protects these martyrs? And she has to translate a Tartutic is a simian-like, invincible group of four people who is the peacekeeping force for the Blue World, and you're just like, what on earth is any of this? You know you're in trouble when a movie is explaining itself well into the third act. And guess what? The reason the movie is 109 minutes is they keep getting it wrong. The kid who's reading the cereal boxes interprets it wrong, and they have to do the exact same scene twice in a row. Like, it's true.
They all got their assigned roles wrong.
Yeah. This is what happens when you write something based on TV tropes. Like, literally. It's just, it's amazing. They even call them the TV trope name.
You know what? He did this idea so much better in Unbreakable, where it's about a comic book obsessed guy who's trying to find a superhero.
Right.
And he's like paying attention to all the comic book tropes. And it's so much better because first and foremost, we care about the characters. Second, there are stakes involved.
And you know what I would say? If you want to fucking do this, M. Night, Shyamalan, Mr. Knight, just fucking do your version of Grimm's Fairy Tales. Do an anthology movie. He has an interesting take. He has some scary ideas. Let him do that. You don't have to remake the wheel, because then you don't have to explain the trope the whole time. I fucking know what Hansel and Gretel's about.
Well, I mean, Terry Gilliam did The Brothers Grimm a year before, and it didn't turn out real well.
Fair. And I like Terry Gilliam, but I think if you did it with like a darker, do it as an anthology movie instead. Don't link them together. Why not? I would be fine with it. And frankly, M. Night has some feelings to him where I think he could just, he could work with, is it Jordan Peele who's doing The Twilight Zone now?
I mean, that was canceled, but yeah, he did.
Well, I mean, but like, he's the kind of guy who could do, okay, what's the one, The Night Gallery? Like, just because you have some good ideas, keep them short. But
God, this movie just drags. It is such a sloppy mess.
I mean, and the stoners, he doesn't even give names to. They're just stoners, group of stoners. They're not supposed to be smoking inside, but of course they're smoking inside. Talking about, because one time we talked about Martin Luther King Jr.
Go fuck yourself. Really, this is just...
Stranger Things does stoners a lot better.
Yeah, at least it gives them character. The problem is, too, there are so many important characters in this that none of them matter. How am I supposed to care about 30 people in a cast? And then, like, they're like, well, we've got to get a bunch of people together to fight off all these scrunts. So let's have a party for the new guy, Bob Balaban.
Nurse.
And so about 100 people show up, and the cops are being called, of course. This is still Philadelphia, the suburb or whatever, adjacent. And nothing works. The music isn't even working. And no one shows up. No scrunts show up. Because this kid apparently read everything wrong. Meanwhile, Bob Balaban gets massacred in what is this? He's like, well, this is a family movie, or this is a horror movie. I wandered into a horror movie. The problem is this can't be a horror movie because there's been no nudity or profanity so far in my story. Fine. And therefore, I'm going to get away at the last second, and he's going to leap at me, and the door is going to close right in front of him, and I'll learn a lesson. Bullshit. This is all stupid. He even has the line, you're not a dog. And he's looking for Mr. Heap, and his first question is, does the bathroom on this floor even work? Everyone's such an asshole.
I can't even remember if I was going to say anything.
I'm sorry.
It's exactly like how M. Night Shyamalan wrote the script.
Yeah.
I can't remember if I said anything.
I mean, at this point, in The Village, I liked The Village, but you can see the rot starting to set in, like the middle drags and the twist. The more you think about it, the less sense it makes.
Right.
This one, you know, you got to have someone in your group who's going to tell you you're about to do something stupid.
But I mean, okay.
Because no one is telling him no anymore.
Well, except for when she's dying on his floor, which is funny, which we're kind of almost to. But like, so at one point, the great Jeffrey Wright, who has dick all to do with this because he just likes doing crossword puzzles. They think he's a symbologist because he's doing crossword puzzles. And then he figures out, no, it's my son who's going to look at a bunch of cereal boxes like it's fucking Seinfeld and interpret them. And then he does it wrong. He gets mauled by the scrunt, so he figures out that he's not the guardian. And then the next night at the party, he turns out that Faber's tropes are wrong because he's the film critic and therefore he has to be wrong.
Of course.
Yeah. And it costs him his life. He's so wrong, he's the only fatality in what I think is supposed to be a horror movie. I could not be sure.
And before he dies, he's talking about, well, it's an annoying background character gets killed to build sympathy. It's like, Who talks like that?
And who assumes that, I'm the loser in the story?
Yeah, no one.
It sounds like he did think he was the loser in the story.
He did, but it made no sense.
Yeah, like no one looks up and he goes, am I a loser? Well, I guess except for Disney's the kid. I grow up to be a loser. Thank you, Spencer Breslin. You've summarized your career.
Oh, come on. That was good. Yeah.
Maybe a little.
Yeah, maybe a little. Anyway, he deduces that the guild is eventually the Seven Sisters, and that two men have to be present, including the Guardian, who's my workout boy, and that the healer is going to be he. That's how it all ends. We do it a second time, and he goes, the only way you can heal this woman who's been mauled on the floor. And everyone at this point, people are like, holy shit, someone should call the police. Bill Irwin is like, Bill Irwin, who plays like a washed out vet. I don't know what his role is, but he's super intense. Eventually, it's like, you have to call the police. I wanted to believe in something more than anyone, but it turns out you're just a fucking loser and we need to get out of here.
Yeah, the scrub is shot 700 times by the Philadelphia police and at the end of the movie.
How does someone explain this to the police? Hey, 911, a narc has been mauled in their legs and it might be a scrunt. And if you send animal control over,
dog bite.
No. How do you explain Bob Balaban's murder? Oh, I'm sorry. A feral animal got into our apartment complex and tore this man apart, presumably. But we don't even cut to that. There's no response. I don't even know if they know he's dead by the end of this movie. It's not even referred to once.
They'd called animal control already and they just said, just keep an eye out.
Well, yeah, but no one acknowledges the fact that one of them has been murdered, mauled to death. You'd think someone would have paid attention. Anyway, the story prepares to depart eventually because, at this point, she's super dying. But
she can only be healed if the healer talks about his past. And at this point, we get the story of how his family was all killed. He was a famous doctor, and they were murdered. And every night I dream of you, and I see the face of God.
And you're just like, I mean, fine. Paul Giamatti is selling this stupid speech, but this comes out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a twist. It's just incredibly sad. And you know what you should do? Set it up earlier.
They did mention the dead family earlier because Story was reading his journal or something.
Fair, but I guess the stutter is supposed to represent his grief. But there's so much of this that would be easier if he always had a picture or he had a locket on him of him and his wife. If there was something that showed he was constantly in pain about this, except for the one scene. And again, Paul Giamatti sells that scene.
I don't know what
he even had real tears. He did a good job, Paul Giamatti. But so much of the rest of this just feels like it's empty. It's really just empty.
I can't imagine his daughters thinking this is a good story.
No, I can't. I can't imagine his daughters. It's one of those movies. You ever see a movie? You were there for it, Daniel. We talked about this. In Triple X, when the stuntman died doing a stunt, and they dedicated the movie to him.
Yeah.
You never want to be dedicated to a movie, except for maybe The Dark Knight, when they dedicated The Dark Knight to Heath Ledger. That one is a good one. But the rest, it's always bad. At the end, Dad, you don't need to dedicate movies to us ever again. You're fine. But again, Paul Giamatti desperately calling up the memory of his dad, the commissioner of baseball, dying of a heart attack or something. He's really selling this scene. And it's just I don't want you to die from a scrunt attack. And you're just guys, give the man words to say. And that's why Grimm's Fairy Tale would be better. Because you could just say Big Bad Wolf. And she got mauled by a wolf.
Yeah.
That's a word. those are words that people say. And I'm sorry, Academy Award nominee Paul Giamatti saying scrunt, narf, and tartutic. It doesn't sound like anything.
And she's going to be turned to the Madam Narf, even though she looks like she's 15.
I mean, she's 25 in this, 30 in this,
The way she looks younger than the actress is.
Well, and I will say, too, By the end of this scene where she's like, she looks like E.T., like she's gone all pale, her hair's gone white, like the infection is spreading, and he's holding her like, I see the face of God.
Is the little boy going to start talking about the man in the moon now?
There you go.
Yeah. And then, I don't know, animal control guy comes through the window in a spacesuit.
Dude, if it ends with just them like shooting the Narf, like tranking the Narf, fine. I don't know. Because at the end, like a bunch of people with pool skimmers are like shooing away a Narf, a Skrunt.
Jesus, these words.
And the eagle shows up at the end. And we're
the eagles are coming.
Right. As if we're filming from the bottom of a pool, like it's...
Oh God, what's that fucking movie? This Is How I Died.
The old Hollywood black and white movie.
I don't know.
That Philadelphia Story.
That's
Great Gatsby, kind of, with him getting shot in the pool.
Yeah, maybe. That's kind of the end of this. I mean, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, I don't know what to tell you either. This is a... Yorgorowski would have watched this movie and would have been like, dude, you're being too
awful.
You're being too surreal. Scale it back a bit.
Surreal, that's a good word.
No one can follow what you're doing.
Well, but like, the other thing is, you're right, but it would be more interesting if he got pulled more and more into a fantasy world, right? Like, if more and more weird things were happening, if the blue world was leaking out or something, if like all of it started to fall apart, it would be more interesting. But instead, we just don't like it. Then the movie ends. I guess everyone's back to where they were before. We don't know. It would have been more interesting if everyone woke up and couldn't remember anything.
Or I don't know what. He suddenly wakes up in the hospital room after someone yells clear.
Right. Like, he wakes up and he's like you said, full Jacob's Ladder, but like he wakes up and Faber, the new guy, is pulling him out of the pool and like, or something, right? And he regains consciousness at the last minute. Or it turns out that Bryce Dallas Howard is Faber's wife, right? And she's giving him CPR. And that's why she's in the dream. It's because she's the one actually rescuing him. Done. We fixed your movies. Fix your stupid movie. I don't know. I hate this movie. This is bad.
Yeah. Is this where we give our final judgments?
Yeah, go ahead, Matt. What was your final thoughts?
My blog draft currently says 7.5 out of 10 because I didn't hate it like these two did. But again, surreal is the right word. Luckily, it's relatively short. I mean, maybe see it once, but maybe not. I mean, it's so weird.
And that's 7.5 out of 10.
I mean, maybe I'll knock it to 7. Maybe I'll knock it to 7.0. I'll have to review it again.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not the blog post that can come out until this episode comes out, so we'll see.
No, Matt, 7.5 is too generous. This was really bad and really incomprehensible. I mean, I don't know what the point was at the end of the day. Why does this movie exist? What was it trying to convey? And... I guess I kind of get the emotional feelings about, it's a bedtime story I told to my kids. That means a lot to people, but that only means a lot to that individual family. It doesn't mean anything to a wide audience. I'm really surprised that this got greenlit. This was really bad.
Again, what I said earlier, you need someone to tell you no.
Yes, you do.
Yeah, I mean, my thoughts on this. I think it's, since you're sharing your ratings, I think I gave it a 1 out of 5 on Letterboxd.
So did I.
Yeah, like, just to me, there's nothing here. Like, and that 1 star is really for Paul Giamatti selling what is a terrible script. Like, this movie, I talked about the CGI and it looks bad, but like, this movie has no weight to it. Like, the soundtrack isn't even that good. And it doesn't stick to anything. So like, I can't even, and it's definitely not a seeing is believing. Just skip this movie. It's bad. Like, and you know, for Matt, if the 7.5 is see it once, I'm saying 1 star, don't see it. It's definitely not worth it. It's not worth the $3 or $4 you'd have to spend to rent this on Amazon. Anyway, we're out of time. We're going to go eat pizza. But next week is an episode that is on The Village, a movie that has its flaws, but looks so much better than this. And has generally a better cast. I don't think I'd trade Paul Giamatti for anything, but I'd say head over heels, it's a better cast. And a script that is interesting. Not great, but interesting. But thanks for listening. Thanks for subscribing. Thanks for reviewing. And thanks for sharing. And in the meantime, keep doing what you're doing and passing us around. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and wherever you get your podcast. Thanks, guys.
Season 9 of Myopia Movies is produced by Nick Hoffman and Daniel Suttis. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman and stars Daniel Suttis and Matt Quinn. The theme music is Surf Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod of Incomtech.com and is licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and review us wherever podcasts are found. Thanks, guys.